And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, it's Midday at the Movies with Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. What did Hollywood learn from the Oscars and from that tumultuous 2023 year? Plus, J. Wynn Russick will review The Squirrels at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick, and we will have an update on the latest on the reclamation and recovery efforts at the Francis Scott Key Bridge in the Patapsco River. And now, it's Midday on the Arts. That's music of Mozart, sung by my next guest, the acclaimed soprano singer Nola Richardson. She is an Australian-American soprano who did part of her graduate work here in Baltimore at the Peabody Conservatory. She went on to Yale, where she earned a doctorate in music, and she has been singing around the country ever since. She's back in Baltimore for a concert of French Baroque music on Sunday afternoon with Baltimore's premier early music group, Pro Musica Rara, and she joins me here in Studio A. It's great to see you.
Really great to see you, Tom.
You and I have known each other for a long time.
Yes.
We worked together when I was back in the day with the Choral Arts Society, and it's just great seeing your career blossom the way it's blossomed. Tell us, let's start with your experience at Yale. You're the first person to receive a doctorate in music in this early music program there. That's really quite something. Tell us about that.
Oh, thank you. One tiny correction. I'm actually the first woman. There was one other singer before me.
Oh, there was. Okay.
Yeah. But I'm the first female singer to achieve that. And yeah, it was a really wonderful opportunity to kind of just deepen my knowledge of historical performance styles and get to work with a lot of really, really top-notch musicians and kind of dive deeper into this early music and concert world.
In the arts, a lot of people get doctorates in whatever their field is, piano or violin or dance or something, because they want to teach. They want to, you know, get a university position, and a lot of universities require that kind of certification. But that's not what you're doing. You are all over the place singing up a storm.
Yeah. Well, the Yale program's interesting, too, because they consider it a very performance-based doctorate, and they actually, part of your requirements to finish the degree are to have 3 years out working in the field and kind of submit a portfolio of what you've done. And, you know, I certainly hope in my future there'll be more teaching and giving back. But right now, my schedule is just a little bit too busy to kind of pursue it.
And that's a great thing to have a busy schedule.
Yes.
You know, as a person who freelanced as a guest conductor, I know those months that aren't so busy, and you start worrying and, you know, chewing on your fingernails.
But so true.
To get to that point where you get, you know, literally more work than you can handle, and you start turning things down because the schedule just doesn't accommodate everything, that's really, it's a great achievement. And how do you sustain that? I mean, physically, emotionally, it's tough getting on a plane, going somewhere, singing a few shows, getting on another plane, going some other place, rehearsing. I mean, the rhythm of a touring professional musician is not easy. How do you see it, and how do you handle it?
Well, I've definitely had my ups and downs with it, and I found I'm really happier when I don't book too many things away from home in a row. But I guess, you know, trying to keep some routine in my day, even when I'm on the road, always helps. And also just becoming very, very organized at using the months or weeks where I have a little bit of a slower schedule to really, really be on top of preparing as far ahead as I can, because inevitably there's going to be a crunch time where you think, oh my gosh, I don't know what I have coming up next, and I still need to learn it. And, you know, it's every little bit you do earlier really helps.
Sure. And of course, in the early stages of your career, there are a lot of pieces you're doing for the first time.
Yes.
I mean, we just heard you sing a little bit of an Alleluia setting by Mozart. You sung that 1,000 times. So, you know, somebody asks you to sing that, that's not going to be too much of a stress. But if someone asks you to sing some new obscure Italian Baroque opera, that's a whole other deal.
Very true. Yes. But I do find too, you know, when you're a singer, your voice kind of changes and develops all the time. So even if you have a piece that you've sung and know very well, I still feel it's pretty important to bring it back out and spend a little time to get it back into your new voice and kind of make sure that you're not sinking into old bad habits or, you know, phoning it in. I won't say phoning it in, but relying too much on what you did years ago.
Yeah. You don't want to sing reflexively. You
exactly.
want to sing communicatively and you know, creatively every time. What's a typical practice day for you on a day that you're not performing? Because singing is a different art than playing the violin or the piano. I mean, we both know pianists who play 5 or 6 hours a day, you know, because it's just that's what it takes to get that music in their fingers. But you can't sing for 6 hours a day. Your voice just can't, voices can't take that. So how do you approach that challenge, you know, that's unique to vocalists?
I do a lot of quiet score study, actually. Anytime I'm on a plane or even the train down this morning, I tend to just spend time kind of, it's called auditing, looking at the music and kind of almost like visualizing with your ears how you want to sing it and kind of working through all the little nuances of the language, because often I'm singing in foreign languages and just kind of spending time working on text and the translations too.
Yeah, knowing what the words mean is kind of where it starts for a singer.
Isn't it?
And the other thing is that so much of the music you sing, because you're a specialist in what we call early music. So classical music is what a lot of folks, you know, refer to everything in the record store when we used to have record stores,
right.
You know, from, you know, people writing music in the 1400s to people writing music last week. But early music, the period of music that you're most comfortable in, give us a date range for that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'd say the earliest side of things, I mean, I've sung some medieval music even by Hildegard von Bingen. So that's like 12th century.
Yeah, that's way back.
But I'd say the majority of what I'm hired to sing is music from the Baroque period, which is about, I guess, like early 1600s through 1750, and encompassing from kind of the music of Monteverdi through what we call the High Baroque, music of Bach and Handel. But I do also venture into music later than that as well, which is
always a joy.
Sure,
you do a lot of contemporary music.
I do,
You've commissioned pieces.
Yes, yeah. I have, yeah. And of course, the Mozart. I love classical music from the classical era, as Tom
Yeah, Mozart yeah. and Haydn mm-hmm. and Beethoven and stuff. One of the challenges that early music performers have, because I did a little bit of early music, I kind of did a whole range of things. There wasn't anything I couldn't do badly, you know, I did it all. But the finding a concert profile for music that's meant for the chamber, it's called chamber music, and it was literally sung in a small room, you know, for enjoyment, for fun, for each other, for the family. It wasn't done for, you know, 2,000 people in a hall in Seattle or Portland or Phoenix, you know. How do you do that? How do you translate music that was intended for a small arena or a small venue into something that matches, you know, the large concert venues that you're playing?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, I think I always like to maintain for this type of music that I'll be singing this weekend, for instance, that kind of feeling of intimacy and directness in terms of how I'm communicating to the audience. I want people to feel like it could just be them in the room with the musicians. But obviously, depending on the size of the venue, you do have to kind of make adjustments in terms of how much you're going to project your voice, how much diction you need to put out so that people really in the back row can hear you. But I think in terms of just connecting with the audience, I like to try and keep it feeling, you know, very close.
Yeah, and for this weekend's concert Sunday afternoon, you'll be working with some colleagues from this wonderful group, Pro Musica Rara. How much time do you get to practice with them before you perform on Sunday afternoon?
Well, we're going to rehearse tomorrow and Saturday, and then I assume probably touch some things on Sunday, but that's it. Yeah. And fortunately, it's a fantastic group of musicians, and everyone's very capable of putting things together like that.
Add water and stir, instant concert. Yeah, that's how this works. Well, we look forward to it. Nola Richardson, she'll be appearing in concert with Pro Musica Rara on Sunday afternoon. Show starts at 3:30. It's at Grace United Methodist Church in North Baltimore. Her collaborators for this show are the tenor Aaron Sheehan, the violinist Cynthia Roberts, and the harpsichordist Adam Pearl. They'll perform French arias and chamber music, and it will be a delightful way to spend the afternoon. It's great to see you, Nola. Thank you so much.
Great to see you, Tom.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.